horizon. Angelique Kidjo, shining like a sun ray.
Thank you to everyone who tuned into our last podcast. I am so happy with everyone who listened in. I was actually a little surprised. It's a lot better than what I expected. So thank you, everybody. And I was just telling Caroline, we're becoming internet famous.
Yeah,
pretty awesome. but we won't be able to do it without your support. Thank you again for tuning in last time and tuning in this time as well.
Yeah, I think to kick us off today, we have a very interesting topic. I think we're going to start off with a tweet, which I think everybody by now is familiar with Justine Sacco. Is that how you say her name?
I think that is how you say her name. Sacco, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, so Miss Justine Sacco, while boarding a flight from London to South Africa, posted a tweet saying, "I'm going to Africa. I hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I'm white." I think Aisha and I are still speechless about this, which is, you know, what, 3 days later. Like, first of all, Justine apparently is South African, which I learned today from Aisha. I don't even know where to start with that.
I know for a fact her parents are South African. I know for a fact I think that she is from South Africa. I will say I'm not sure how long she's been in the States.
And then there's the fact that she works in PR, which, whether she meant this as a really bad joke or whether she was serious, in either case, this is just still sad. Flabbergasting, I guess, is a good word for it. I just have no words for it. Like, I mean, there's so many things wrong with this. First is the "I'm going to Africa," right? Where in Africa are you going? I think we covered on this last time. You know, it's,
you know, it's what, Caroline? I think we're gonna be covering this every podcast. I think whatever it is we're talking about, and today on Africa Untold, we'll be talking about food. But first, let us remind you that Africa is not a country.
Just in case you forgot, it's the last
podcast. From the last podcast.
Oh, man.
But you know, for me, Caroline, with Justine, or however you say her name, I think it's Justine, what hit me the most, initially when she posted that and I saw that, I didn't see it on her original Twitter. I actually saw it after it was reposted on several other news outlets. And I didn't know initially that she was even South African. So when that was posted, my initial reaction was, well, here we go, another, you know, unfortunately ignorant Western or, you know, American or whatever, posting a very ignorant statement. And then I found out she was South African, and it honestly blew my mind even more, because I would think as a South African, she would actually, as a Caucasian South African, I would feel that she would know better. You know what I mean? It's one thing to be from the West and to be ignorant, but it's another thing to be from the actual continent, from a country in the continent, and to make such a statement. So when I found out she was South African, or like she was originally from South Africa and her parents lived there, that's when I couldn't comprehend it at all. And you know, it's amazing, because I was reading several news outlets when this news broke out, and you look at the comments, and my first reaction was, I went to Caroline and I said, oh my goodness, we have a lot of work to do. Because some of the comments are so fascinating. You know, obviously you do not catch AIDS by being around, one, just by being around people with AIDS, and two, being around African people does not give you AIDS. And it was astounding that some of the comments I was seeing were Oh, well, she has a, when Justine made that, tweeted that, some of the comments I was seeing were, oh, but she has a point. You know, statistically, majority of the people with AIDS are Black Africans. And I'm sitting here literally going like, are we reading the same tweet? You know, are we living in the same century? Is this 2013? Is this real life? Is this real life?
Right.
And that, so that was one of the comments that blew me away. It was the comment, you know, like statistically speaking, she's right. And then the other comments that I was seeing was, the comment, the issue of freedom of speech. There is a big difference between freedom of speech and outright blatant racism.
Yes, a huge difference.
Huge.
And this was just blatant racism. I mean, okay, forget the fact that she said, oh, I'm going to Africa, right? Like, I can't get AIDS because I'm white. Like, which disease has any correlation with, oh, because you're this race, you cannot get a disease? Like, race isn't even scientifically viable.
Oh, you're so right. That's the other, I mean, this is how many things were wrong. Someone was able to be wrong in multiple ways in less than 140 characters. The fact that she said she was going to Africa, and the fact that she said, you know, being around Africans or Black people could give her AIDS. Literally, I think her sentence maybe had, what, like 20, 30 words in it?
Yeah, it was, yeah, she didn't even get close to the character limit, and she managed to display her ignorance, or I don't even know. Like, I'm having a hard time finding words today because I'm still so, I think, flabbergasted by this whole, I just can't believe it. I think the part that really got to me, when you said she was from South Africa, I was really shocked, but just, if you work in PR, shouldn't you know better? But I think what Aisha and I wanted to discuss today is, where do all these misconceptions about Africa come from, right? Because it's not, they're not just limited to, you know, people who have never heard anything about Africa or who've never been to Africa. Gosh, you know, Justine's parents live in South Africa, so clearly she has exposed her to this other side of Africa. So where are all these misconceptions coming from, and what can we do about them?
Yeah, I mean, Caroline and I, with this episode, we wanted to talk about, I guess, historically speaking, where did this idea of Africa as a country, because it had to have come from somewhere.
Right.
It wasn't just born overnight. Where did this idea of Africa being a country come from? And some of the things we're going to bring up are going to be academically sound arguments that we've both encountered during our academic careers. And some of these might just be theories. And I think I will point them out as we go along, which ones would be my personal theories versus what is considered academically sound in Afrocentric studies.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we are definitely not experts on Africa or our country, or even, you know, I'm not a full expert on Kenya. I wouldn't consider myself one. So, yeah, we are, like I said, just trying to tell our stories and trying to get more exposure out there. So, yes, many of the things we discuss may or may not be academically sound, and, you know, feel free to correct us where we are wrong.
We're just here to kind of give you what our perspective is about the continent and what's going on and what we think.
Tell me, who's responsible for what we teach our children? Is it the internet or the stars on television? Why, oh, why? Why, oh, why, oh?
Oh. To start off, like, I'm going to start with, like, the most common and basic idea of how this concept of the African quote-unquote country came about. We know that a majority of historical studies or books that were written in a very Eurocentric version. It was a Eurocentric tale for the most part. And of course, you know, a lot of different ethnicities and cultures wrote their own history. The Chinese wrote their own history. The Arabs wrote their own history. Some Africans wrote their own history, actually. I don't know if that's... Did they or did they not?
I don't think there was very much written history in Africa. In most regions, it was just oral history that was passed down.
Right. So, unless you count... Ethiopians might have had their own written history, too, if I'm not mistaken. But for the most part, the history that has been given this sort of a privilege has been the Eurocentric history. If you look at historical accounts of the African continent, it has always been considered, especially right before, you know, colonization and during the slavery era, it was very much considered a dark, large mass.
Yeah.
Whoever came to the African continent and went back to Europe did not accurately describe what was going on. It was very much, and I'm, you know, part of it could have been just, you know, misunderstandings, because in the and I'm saying that in the sense that at the beginning, at the very least, in the sense that, you know, you meet people for the first time you've never seen before, you don't know their language, they all probably look similar to you. So it's fair to argue that probably the first Europeans that encountered Africans way back when weren't particularly knowledgeable about the subject, and they went back home and reported, you know, we saw this and this and this.
Right.
But over time, I mean, over the centuries, of course, people knew better. The more you encounter something, the more you know about it, or at least I would hope so. And unfortunately, a lot of the reports that were being taken back were very generic and very dark, you know, and Africa was considered this impenetrable landmass. Granted, at the time, there were many tribes, many ethnicities, many different cultures. To start off, that's I think we can pinpoint that as the beginnings of this concept of an Africa without divisions or clear cut differences. I would say so. Yeah,
and I think one thing you touched on is also when the Europeans came, or even before the Europeans came, I think divisions, and this is my personal theory, divisions in Africa didn't exist as, oh, this is Kenya, this is Nigeria, this is Somalia. You know, there were not those clear nationality divisions. The divisions were more tribal divisions, like, oh, these people live here, these people live here, and this is how people related to each other. And so perhaps the fact that the boundaries were not defined as, oh, we are Kenyans or we are Nigerian, maybe that had something to do with it, although I don't know how valid that is. Like, were country borders put in before colonialism happened, or did country borders exist?
No, they were pretty much put in right before colonialism started. So what happened was there was a meeting, a conference of sorts that occurred, I think it was in Belgium. I'm kind of forgetting a little bit of my history, but where a bunch of the European powers, and this I think was in the 19th century, a bunch of European powers pretty much took a map of Africa as they knew it, decided to cut it up, and draw boundaries, and each European country kind of said, okay, we're going to call this Kenya and Nigeria, and we're going to take those as our colonies.
Yeah.
But that wasn't necessarily the beginning of, quote, you know, colonialism in Africa. It had been something that had been, it was made official in the 19th century, I would say, but it was something that pre-existed beforehand. But anyway, to answer your question, no, there were no boundaries that actually existed before colonialism.
Right, yeah. And so I think, you know, that had something to do with it. But I think that your point to where Africans couldn't tell their story, and the only story you had for hundreds of years was told by the missionaries or the colonialists, like that was the only story. And even until, it wasn't until very, very recently that African literature or African history written by Africans for Africans has not permeated to the West until very, very recently, you know, with people like, you know, Goguryeo Dong, or which, you know, he wrote more fiction, but people like him, I think he is the first major African writer that I can think of whose writing permeated to the West, and then that, I think, gave space for other writers to start telling their own story from their own perspective, you know, as opposed to just whatever the European perspective was.
And you have, I think we have to realize, at the time the Europeans were deciding to, and by Europeans I mean mainly Germans, Italians, British, Portuguese, and who am I forgetting? The French. At the time when they were sitting and trying to plan this out, when they were first encountering the African continent and the African peoples, they had already conceived this notion of a nation state. If you study political science, you're going to be a little familiar with this concept of creating a nation state where you have clear-cut boundaries between you and the other nation states around you, and you're unified by a language and a certain culture and et cetera, et cetera. And so their notion at the time was very much this distinctive notion of unity and unity amongst a certain group of people, but division from the rest of the groups around you, depending on your language and your cultural roots. So while when they came to, say, the African continent, these things didn't exist, and they couldn't conceive anything because, unfortunately, the colonialist ideas were, in their minds, the best alternative. They couldn't conceive the existence of a landmass without this concept of a nation state. So what did they do is they enforced that concept of a nation state without trying to understand the actual reality on the ground.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, it's also, you know, it was kind of the concept of, well, we're the colonizers. We've been led by God. And of course, they use that idea to justify their brutality. But it was very much that we've been sent by God, and we have the right. This is how you create, you know, a state. This is how you create a government. You know, we're right, you're wrong, and so we're gonna impose this concept on you.
I wake up in the morning, tell you what I see on my TV screen. I see the blood of an innocent child, and everybody's watching. Now I'm looking out my window, and what do I see? I see an army of a soldier man marching across the street. Hey, hey, Mr. Soldier Man, tomorrow is the day you go to war. Boy, you are fighting for another man's girl, and you don't even know him.
If you think about other countries that were also colonized by Europeans, right? So, for example, Japan or India, a lot of these other nations were still able to very much maintain their cultural heritage as is, and were still, and some of them were able to fight the British, and the British left, you know, way sooner, and then that's why they had to move to Africa, because they got kicked out of these other places. And so I wonder, what is it about Africa, and this is maybe a different subject, but what is it about us that we, when the colonialists came, we were unable to fight back. You know, we were unable to keep them out of,
right,
of our land, as it was back then.
My theory is, okay, so if you look at, for example, Japan. Japan is a fairly homogeneous country. It's a lot easier to fight back when you have such unity. Because one thing, like we said in our last podcast, you know, even in Kenya, you know, it's a small country, not a very big population, yet we have so many different ethnicities and so many different tribes that it's sometimes it is a very difficult issue to kind of try and rally the troops and try to get them around a cause.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I think that played a big part of that was the tactics that they used. Without a doubt, if you look at the way the African continent was colonized, the way they came about it was a very different strategy compared to the way other countries were colonized. For example, if you look, say, at Latin America, right? In Latin American countries, there were sizable European populations. Or European descendant populations, let me say that. So you had the natives, and then you have the mestizos, the mixed people, right. And then you have a lot of Spaniard or Spanish descendants and other European immigrants. In Africa, I think that one of the main differences was that you didn't quite have that. What you had was every European or colonizer that was there strictly to colonize.
Yeah.
This was not a place that they really made a home of. They were there to do a job of, you know, governance. So that, you know, that strategy was different. And then the third point I was going to make was anyone who was colonized was obviously colonized because they were seen as inferior. I think with Africans, unfortunately, and a lot of people might argue against me, and say that I'm wrong, which is fine, I think Africans were definitely seen as the most inferior. Because, I mean, if you look at the fact that, if you look at historical illustrations from, like, the 18th century and the 17th century, I mean, we were pretty much, as Africans, we were represented as chimpanzees.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't even considered humans.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't even considered humans anymore.
Yeah.
And so I think that also had a part to play in that, in the way that the Europeans approached their colonization to the African on the African continent. And so it's four things, I guess, or three or four things. The inferiority issue, the inability. We weren't very homogenous. We're not a very homogenous continent, so it's very. And you know that the colonizers definitely used that to their advantage. It was very much divide and rule, divide and rule. And whatever they could divide and rule, they did it.
Yeah, I think the homogeneity one, I really think that the homogeneity one is the biggest one. You're right, the fact that we spoke different languages and didn't understand each other, and, you know, that allowed for clearly divisions, and not even just the colonization, right? The lack of homogeneity is and, you know, economic incentive. That's what allowed Africans to sell other Africans to go off and become slaves, you know? So, and, you know, it's still happening today. It's the historical cause of misconceptions about Africa. But we live in the age of information, right? Live in, you know, age where you can catch a flight to Africa, you can Wikipedia stuff, you know, and see what the true Africa is. So I think that presently, why do people still have those misconceptions?
So we talked about historical roots of misconceptions about Africa on this podcast. Next time, we're going to cover off on more modern sources of misconceptions, mainly focused on the media's portrayal of Africa and how that affects how people view the continent. So yeah, thank you very much for listening. We hope you join us next time on Africa Untold. Bye-bye.
I'm in chains, you're in chains too. Our uniforms and you are uniforms too. I'm a prisoner, you're a prisoner too, Mr. Jailer.